You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 21st of November 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we have a very special guest with us today, someone who I had the pleasure of meeting a couple of weeks back. It's somebody that I had hoped to bump into for quite a few years now, actually, since I first heard him hosting his podcast for the Nordic Resistance Movement. The podcast is called Nordic Frontier, and of course the special guest is Andreas Johansson, all the way from Sweden. Andreas, hello, welcome to the show. Great to meet you. How are you doing?
Well, thank you for having me on, Sven. I'm doing great. It is getting a little chilly in the land of the north, so we're making fires now. Pretty cozy.
I bet. I do follow your Telegram channel. I forgot to say you also do Tivaz tunes. You don't just host your own podcast. You also make your own music. And I often see on there there's images or video of you on a snowmobile and doing various work there in Sweden. And what I really wanted to talk about really was the sort of stuff that you talked about in your speech at the Patriotic Alternative Conference, and the sort of things that made you wake up to being a nationalist, because I know part of that was instinctively feeling Swedish as opposed to feeling as if you were a part of any other group. So maybe we could start there with what you were like before you became a nationalist and what it was that drew you to nationalism.
Yeah, sure. It's a long story. I'm going to try and compress it. But basically growing up, I didn't have any contact with multicultural societies or any diversity, and I wouldn't call myself political at all. What I did call myself in the speech was like a peace-loving hippie and kind of a living on the outside of the mainstream, never enjoyed the mainstream, never really liked the so-called system, but I couldn't articulate why or why it was bad. So when I was looking at how I became political or start to think about nationalist themes, I ended up somewhere in Australia about 12 years ago, maybe 14 years ago. It's been crazy long. But when I was traveling around in Australia, I had some experience with the so-called Aborigines over there, the native peoples of Australia. And there's two different kinds of Aborigines. It's the city abos and it's the natural abos that are out in the bush. And I had cozy time of living with the city abos for a couple of months, and that really jarred me as an innocent Nordic village boy. It was pretty crazy living with these people, and I couldn't understand why they weren't like me. You know, pretty dense, maybe, but I have a different perspective on it today. So that was one of the most extreme encounters I've had with non-white races. And traveling around Australia for a few years, my goal going there in the first place was to kind of escape my life in Sweden, because I felt I don't know. It was very nihilistic and depressing, and I wanted something new. So my goal going there was basically to change my life. So I met my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time in Australia, and we traveled around the country, working and living and meeting a lot of different people. But after a while, I started feeling very homesick for some reason, and I couldn't really say why, because I didn't like what I was doing before at home. But I wanted to go home, back to my home village. I felt this traction. So after about 2 years in Australia, we started to save a lot of money to get back home again. And it was when we landed back in Sweden, when I stepped off the plane up here in Luleå, my hometown, and I felt the smell of the pine trees, that I realized that I was home. And it was such a powerful feeling that it sticks with me today. That the forest and the pine trees, this environment and everything is tied to me. So it was a blood and soil experience that I had then. Then I still couldn't put the words. But after arriving home, I had some hippie friends that were doing the so-called YouTube rabbit holes. All kinds of different alternative information. A lot of conspiracy theories. So I went down all these rabbit holes with the chemtrails and the moon landings and the lizard people, the Illuminati and all that stuff for years. And I was listening to a lot of Red Eyes at the time. And after a while, it started getting a little bit crazy. And I couldn't really put the finger on what the system was or who was oppressing us and why, until I found National Socialism. And the way I did that was I got a tip from another podcast to check out the Nordic Resistance Movement. So supposedly this was a Swedish National Socialist group. I checked it out and I found out that I agreed with pretty much everything that they were writing on their websites, all their articles and stuff. So I was very impressed with that. But when I realized this, and this is something that I forgot to mention in my speech actually, when I realized that National Socialism might be the thing, I wanted to find out about the big man from from the 30s, Uncle A. And I knew I had probably been fed a lot of bullshit in school and a lot about the history that I've been taught. So I wanted to know the real truth. Like, I've been going down all these rabbit holes, finding out about useless things. Let's find out about Hitler. And it was when I watched The Greatest Story Never Told that kind of cemented my... I can't really say cemented, because I realized that it was literally the other point of view on World War II and Adolf Hitler. So it wasn't an objective view, I wouldn't say. It was like our view of him, a veneration. And after that, I also read Mein Kampf following that to then really cement my views on National Socialism. And after that, I think my new worldview, my National Socialist worldview, was pretty much cemented. And I joined the Nordic Resistance Movement in 2016 and started to go to their rallies. And one of the biggest events, still to this day actually, was the big rally we had in Stockholm in 2016. It was very nice. We had about 700 people that were walking behind our flags, which is quite unique in Sweden. Usually it's a conglomeration of different groups coming together for a common cause, like stop immigration. But this was a demonstration arranged by us and for our cause, using the first point of a political program, close the borders and start the repatriation, was the tagline. And it was after this humongous success that I saw it as, that I wanted to do something for the movement. I wanted to do something big. And I wanted to reach out internationally, because at the time we didn't have any English-speaking platforms. So I started the podcast, The Nordic Frontier, after that.
Yeah, I remember that. I think I remember the rally that you're talking about. I think I can recall seeing video from that. And of course, I remember the first few episodes of the Nordic Frontier. And it seemed as if it was more like a co-hosting program. And as it's grown, it's just like you've become the main host. And just to go back to when you were there in Australia. So it was really sort of two awakenings that you had. I think you could see that the Aborigines were a different race to you. They were completely different to you, a different subspecies to you. And then at the same time, you had a sort of awakening of what it meant to be Swedish and that you were a part of this ethnic group, sort of small, at a smaller level than the larger, wider race, but just as part of your ethnicity and the importance of the land around you and breathing in the smell of the pines. And then discovering there was this different view to World War II than the one that we have actually been taught. And then obviously, when you read Mein Kampf, it's very different. I mean, I found it very different to the way that it had been portrayed to me as. There's nothing in it about executing Jews or anything like that. And it's all about putting the needs of your ethnic group above the needs of other ethnic groups, which is what you should be doing within your own territory. I mean, back then we didn't have multiculturalism, but today obviously we have multiculturalism. So that's mainly what we struggle against. And I think that's what you were saying there about close the borders and stop immigration. So you then started taking a role in the podcast Nordic Frontier, and I guess you must have only been in the Nordic resistance movement then for about a year. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, I was active for about 6 months before I started the podcast, so it was quite a turn. But I'd wanted to start a podcast for many years before that, but I didn't have a platform, I didn't have a topic, and it's something that people might not think of when they feel like they want to start a podcast. They have so much to talk about. Is that, well, after you've done a few shows, you pretty much got it out of your system. And then you need to have something to drive you to keep producing. And I always had first Nordic Resistance Movement and all the guests that I wanted to invite, but also National Socialism. It's like an endless source of inspiration that I have used. And you mentioned as well that I have this Tivas Tunes side project that I have that is basically my excessive creativity that I have to put somewhere. So I make these, you know, very different, crazy, like media projects that I publish, and then created a platform for it so I can get it out of my system, because I do a lot of work for, like, propaganda work for the movement as well. But all of my ideas, they don't fit in with the movement propaganda. So it has to go somewhere.
Yeah, I can remember the Tivas Tunes starting as well. And I can remember you having a SoundCloud page there. And the music that you write, I mean, you end up adding samples to it, samples of Jews talking about anti-Semitism, or Louis Farrakhan talking about Hitler. I mean, these obscure samples that really go well with the music, and they sort of lodge there in your head. I mean, were you writing music before then? Is that something that you've done for a while, or was that something new as well?
Yeah, it was kind of new, because I'm not a musician, and I never did music growing up. And I suddenly had like a musical awakening, you can say, around 2015, when I started fiddling around with music, literally sitting with a MIDI keyboard. It's actually just a keyboard on the laptop, actually, that kind of doubles as a MIDI keyboard. And I figured out how to make a chord. That was my first musical epiphany. It was pretty powerful. And I was like, wow, this is quite easy. And then using software like you can today, it's crazy easy to make. It's too easy to make music, even good music. So even idiots can make something good.
I would never have guessed that you'd only been making music that long. I thought you were going to say, well, you have a musical background and maybe you used to do that sort of thing before, because, I mean, the tunes that you make, they are great music. It's good music. You know, it's not stuff that you just listen to and you say, oh, that's okay. It's stuff that, you know, that I listen to again and again and again. We've got them on the radio album playlist. So, and I think this is one of the things you get with nationalism. It spurs you on to be creative and to try and keep improving yourself, doesn't it? And that's a part of the national socialist idea as well, and I think that's quite core to the Nordic resistance movement, isn't it? Trying to bring the best out into people. Don't you have endurance tests that you go on, and you go out in the wilds camping in the snow and that sort of thing? Is that the sort of thing you do, trying to really bring the best out in people?
Yeah, definitely. It is a never-ending source of inspiration, and it can be implied to so many areas in your life, just like morally and ethically, you can use it every day. And we actually just had an excursion this weekend when we were out sleeping in tents and hiking the mountains. So always having a positive attitude, no one's allowed to be sour, even though it's freezing cold or wet sometimes. You have to keep morale high. But I also think that in your private life, without just, Tourette's hiling or anything stupid like that, you can be just a respectable person applying National Socialism to your personality or life, just being an inspirational person. It works great. And in an organization like ours, you have a lot of opportunities to take on responsibilities. There's a lot of positions that need to be filled, and no one's getting paid. Everyone's doing this out of their own free spare time. It's idealistic work that we do. But it builds a lot of character. And, you know, the Tyr rune is our main symbol, which signifies self-sacrifice in many ways. That's one of our main things.
Well, that's important, isn't it? That you're doing what you can for your people, doing your duty for your people, trying to uplift them and trying to set a good example as well. I mean, the Nordic resistance movement have always stood out, I think, just to everyone as basically the most impressive looking organization that there is in Europe. I mean, when I can recall seeing you going on marches, you've got guys with the same police protection shields that the police have, things like that. And you're also always looking really neat, really presentable with a shirt and a tie. And then when you're handing out your leaflets, you've got two guys there with flags and they double up as defensive weapons, because I've seen that you've been attacked quite a few times as well. And you also have the Nordfront.se, I think it is, the Nordfront website, and Vastarinter as well. Although I don't know if that one is still going, but Nordfront,
yeah, that's illegal. It had to be shut down.
Yeah, it's a while since I've seen that one. But the Nordfront.se, I mean, that is a very impressive media website. And also, I think you have a newspaper as well that you hand out. Is that right?
Well, we have done a few physical copies of Nordfront. And in the past, we've had physical papers. But it's not economically feasible to keep printing them. So... But Nordfront has been very successful, and it's become a staple in the Swedish alternative news sphere. Everyone knows that it's a National Socialist perspective on the website, which is interesting because it's got a lot of nationalist and also just alternative people reading the news on the website. So... Because in Sweden, the censorship is pretty hard, and our mainstream media really doesn't let anything, it doesn't have any pressure valve whatsoever in the mainstream. So that's why we have quite an extensive alternative news scene in Sweden. So, but we're still one of the top websites, I would say, even though there's a lot of stigma around the brand.
Do you tend to get a lot of support when you're out from the public? I mean, sort of people that probably wouldn't want to join up, you know, maybe they're a bit frightened to join up, but they would say thank you for drawing attention to this, you know, if you're doing a public demonstration, that sort of thing, or are the people sort of too frightened of you? Has the mainstream media frightened them off you too much?
Well, it's a mixed bag for sure. And this idea that you talk about being scared is getting worse, because the media and the laws in Sweden are getting worse. And, you know, the media's depiction of us definitely as a downright terrorist organization without there being any convictions or any labeling from, I don't know who would do that, like the secret police or anything officially. So it's a mixed bag when we go out and meet people, but there's always someone that's positive, and you can see it takes a lot of guts to come up to us in town and shake our hand and say that we do a good job. You know, people are aware of the stigma. So if a person does that, they have gathered a lot of courage. It sounds silly, but it's very serious business, and it's always really nice to see. But if we do like a banner drop over a bridge, over a heavy trafficked road, then we can get a lot of happy honks and also arm movements that are illegal from the cars, because then they are at a safe distance and no one can see them signaling towards us. So it's a great measurement to do those banner drops, because you're always positively surprised.
It's always a nice feeling, isn't it, when you hear the horns like beeping as people are driving past, and you know that they're showing their support for you. And the Nordic Resistance Movement is also a political party. So, I mean, that surely it's got to be difficult for them to paint you as being terrorists if you're actually a legal political party that stands people in elections. I mean, how long have you been a registered political party for, and what sort of success do you have with that?
Well, we have been registered since 2016, and we've had moderate success, I would say, in the mainstream elections, not very good. But we have used, obviously, the election and our party as a platform to reach out to people, and that has been very successful. We have, last election, I think we were one of the most talked about parties in Sweden constantly, and they learned from 2018. This year we had an election in 2022. The media was completely silent on everything that we did, both nationally and locally, even though we did activities all the time. So they learned their lesson there. But in election results, I would say that they're very modest, to say the least. But we have established a brand, become a household name, for good or bad. The people that do agree with us, they are very much fanatical about our cause. And we also have the problem of then another kind of pressure valve. We have lighter parties like the Sweden Democrats or Alternative for Sweden that have stepped onto the scene. Or the Sweden Democrats were always there. But a lot of our supporters, they say they like everything that we do, but for tactical reasons, they're going to vote for the Sweden Democrats. And now the Sweden Democrats, they had over 20% of the vote in this election. And they're still not in government because they're being boycotted by the other parties. But supposedly, they have some ideas that they have driven through in the agreeing with the other parties not to be in government. And just recently, the other day, a new law was passed, bypassing or changing our foundational law regarding freedom of association. And this makes it possible for the government to label an organization as a terrorist organization and banning it. And we're obviously looking at this law. Who is it going to actually affect? Because do real terrorists, are they out there registering parties and organizations and, you know, having all kinds of political activities? Is that what terrorist organizations do? Or are they going to label just political opposition as terrorists and then use that law against us? That's the kind of stuff we're looking at.
Well, that's concerning, isn't it? I mean, you would think that the environment would be improved by having a civic nationalist party that's in coalition, that's the second biggest party in Sweden. You would think that would make the environment more conducive to ethno-nationalism, more conducive to the Nordic resistance movement. It's a shame.
It's almost that's worse. Happened.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It seems to be making it worse, because I was going to say, I mean, maybe these people that were saying that they were voting tactically, they were voting for the Sweden Democrats because there was more of a chance of them actually getting in, and they have got in, but then they haven't done anything since they're there. If anything, it appears that they're making life worse for you.
Yeah, the thing is, what happens with the Sweden Democrats, they have been bullied now since their start of their existence, since the 90s, being called Nazis and racists. And what they're doing now is to appease their bully at any cost. So just the other day, this is a funny story, this local Sweden Democrat on Twitter went out and he did a tweet out of the clear blue sky saying that, well, at least we're not the Nordic resistance movement. Like, we should just outright ban. No, wait, we should ban the Nordic resistance movement from Twitter. That's what he said. And in his replies, no one agreed with him, basically. At best, people said, or at worst, I would say, people said, we should have freedom of speech. What are you saying? This is crazy. Everyone should be allowed to have their say. They're not doing anything illegal. And then everyone else was basically positive towards us, saying like, this guy should just get off Twitter himself. And then after getting ratioed like that, he did another tweet. He literally doubled down and said that apart from being banned from Twitter, we should be made illegal as a terrorist organization. And when he said that, it got even worse. More people went into his mentions and ratioed his tweet. And literally 2 hours later, he deleted both tweets. And this is a typical guy that is up and coming in the Sweden Democrats, and he thinks he's doing a good job by appeasing the left, basically. Look here, what a good boy I am. At least I'm not a Nazi terrorist. We should ban those. And then people that actually enjoy free speech and freedom of association go in there and tell him what they think of that. So they're quite pathetic, and I think they're also dangerous because they're changing our foundational laws to basically stop us.
That sounds like the Constitution. So they're trying to change the Constitution.
Exactly. It's like the Swedish version of the Constitution, yeah.
Well, that's really, really quite shameful of them to be doing that. You would think maybe they would look at it and they would think, well, all the while there exists organizations that are further to the right of us, we look more center. You know, if they eliminate the Nordic resistance movement, then they become the people that are the furthest on the right, don't they? It's not going to make life any the better for them, is it? It's just going to make life worse for them. You would think they would understand that, especially if some of them have come from a ethno-nationalist background. Because I did read that the Sweden Democrats had a National Socialist origins, or had something to do with National Socialism. Is that right?
Yeah, they had a lot of National Socialists in the party, but they were never a National Socialist party. So they were basically an ethnic nationalist party back in the 90s. And they had like flyers and stickers against race mixing and all kinds of things like that, which they had a switch of leadership in the beginning of the aughts, or like mid-aughts, where Jimmie Åkesson took over the party. And they were called the Four, and there was four of those guys. And they literally reformed the party, made it more soft, and ever since they've been apologizing for their history. And, well, we've seen it coming for a long time, but we say things just like you were saying, that if you let us be the so-called extreme right, you know, they will have more success, and we will help bring more radical suggestions into like normalizing these things like mass immigration or opposition against mass immigration and for repatriation and stuff like that. But it just doesn't seem like they want that stuff. They just want to get into the cozy warmth and they want to shut their door behind them so no one else can get in there.
They just want to appeal to their opponents, basically, the people that have been going after them all these years. So another thing that has always impressed me about the Nordic resistance movement is, you know, it's been going for a long time, and you seem to have quite a tight organization. And when you have the Leaders Perspective podcast, I was quite impressed when people have got into trouble with the law or whatever, you've sort of had your own court. And you've said, well, we don't recognise the findings of the establishment court. We have our own court, and we'll judge our members as we judge them. And it just seemed to me that you had a system in place to account for anything that happened, basically. And it must have grown organically over time. And I think the Nordic resistance movement must have been going for 20 years, 30 years, something like that, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Didn't you have a book?
Yes, 25 years we celebrated.
And what about this organization then? Have you got sort of, you have got plans for every eventuality, and everything's organized? Am I correct in thinking that?
Yes, there is definitely a plan B for different scenarios. So it's, you know, it's hairy. Like we were banned in Finland, for example, and it was basically on a technicality. It was called breaching good customs, which was ridiculous, but they had some evidence, so-called evidence, against us. And yeah, it was a ridiculous court case. But when they were banned, these people, they were part of the organization, they're literally not allowed to organize politically in Finland anymore, because they started a new party called Koti Vapauta and ran that for a few months, and that went to court, and they banned that too. So they're playing around with very dodgy laws doing this kind of stuff. Before they banned the Nordic resistance movement, Finland hadn't banned anything, I think, since the 70s. Like, it's crazy long time since they've been using anything like that. But there's definitely a plan B for going ahead. And just because you make National Socialism illegal doesn't mean that we're going to stop being National Socialist. And when you talk about these like internal investigations that we have, an example is that we don't recognize hate speech laws as a real law. It's an anti-white law used against white people in their own countries. So it's pretty crazy. And we have members being convicted of that all the time. And we also have set up systems where we can use freedom of speech and get convicted and still be all right, basically, because we have so-called responsible publishers for our websites for all of our material, and we publish the activism that we do, but we also publish the news on Nordfront.se, and we publish the radio shows that we do. All of this stuff is written on one person to be responsible for everything that's being said and published. And then the leftists, they sit and look through all of our material for something that might be on the fringe of being illegal. And that's how they push this hate speech law even further. It's a so-called rubber paragraph where they can stretch it when they feel like it. So, but we still do it. That's the thing. We still use the language to communicate our ideas about race and about our opponents, the anti-whites. So, yeah, we're not compromising on that front.
Yeah, it seems that you're extremely, extremely disciplined and extremely dedicated, and you're very careful to stay within the law. So if you do get accused of these things at Nordfront, then you've got a defence. I mean, and it also seems to me as if they're trying to, especially in Finland, they're trying to clamp down on the former activists' human rights. If they're not allowed to set up another organization, then they're being denied the ability to participate in democracy. And that seems to be quite a chilling feature of not just Sweden over the last few years, is when an organization gets banned, the people that were in that organization, if they then try to take part in any other political organization, even if it's very different from the one that was banned, then they run the risk of being arrested again and being accused of being something to do with terrorism. I mean, it's quite shocking what's happened. I mean, we've seen this happen in Britain. You're just saying there that it's happened in Finland. I know in France, I think Generation Identity, they were banned as being a terrorist organization. So I don't know if it happens over there as well, that former members of GI then get arrested for trying to take part in democratic proceedings by joining another political organization or whatever, then, you know, it just seems to me that has got to be a misuse of the law to say that people cannot take part in democracy any longer, even when they're trying to do something completely different from what they were doing before. Surely it's your human right. And we want people to be involved in community. And I mean, I'm saying this from the point of view of the democratic point of view. You want everybody to be involved in the community. That's what democracy is. Everybody should be able to have a voice. They should be able to say what they need to say, as long as it's kept within the law, obviously. But you should have a plurality of views. Otherwise, you don't have a democracy. You have a tyranny. You know, that's why we need organizations like the Nordic Resistance Movement that are challenging these things and that are pushing the envelope, that are discussing these issues in ways that conform within Swedish law. I take my hat off to you. I do think it's a really impressive organization. I know the Americans are very impressed with it as well. It's probably the best political ethno-nationalist organization in Europe, I would say. Well, we probably should finish round about here, Andreas. I don't know if there's anything you would like to finish with, if you want to tell people where they can find your work, your musical work, your podcasts, anything else before we finish?
Yeah, sure. It was very nice to finally be on the show. I know you've been hosting our show, Nordic Frontier, for years now on your platform. So that's very nice. And it was also very nice to meet up with people in Patriotic Alternative on the conference. It was really nice. And it was an honor to represent the Nordic Resistance Movement in England. If you want to follow what we do, you can find everything on nordicresistancemovement.org. If you want to find my podcast, Nordic Frontier, you can find it on Telegram. It is Nordic Frontier Podcast and Nordic Frontier Chat if you want to hang out with the listeners. And you can also find my pet project, Tivas Tunes, on Tivas Comfy Corner on Telegram as well.
Highly recommended, all of those websites. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Andreas. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.